You know, just in trying to figure out what I saw last night in that that Vancouver LA game, because the Drew Doughty comments afterwards had me a little bit perplexed. Isn't that kind of what should happen more to the Los Angeles Kings this year? I was kind of like, I read the comments. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, what kind of season do you think your team's going to have?
Yeah, and that's kind of like one of my thoughts after reading and seeing those comments was is Drew Doughty built to be on a rebuilding team? Because, hey, man, you're in game 3 of 82. Like, I hate to break it to you, but you're gonna have a lot of rough nights if this is how triggered you are this early in the season.
It's tough. Like, this is a proud athlete, and this is an athlete that's used to a lot of winning, whether it's Olympics, whether it's Stanley Cups. Like, there's been a lot of winning in Drew Doughty's professional life. So things like this are hard. Like, it's hard for a guy like Drew Doughty. It's hard for a guy like Ante Kopitar. It's hard for a guy like Dustin Brown. It's hard for a lot of these guys who are at the, you know, the end of that last generation Los Angeles Kings team, as that transitions to whatever it's going to become now as they start to get younger and start to get faster. But you're right. There's still more pain here. Like, this is not turning around quickly. Sure, there are some examples of teams, you know, going from a rebuild to actualizing as a playoff team quick. I don't think anyone expects the Los Angeles Kings to fit that mold. I still think it's going to be a number of seasons of pain here for Doughty's squad.
Yeah, and it's a bit of a fine line for the great athletes as well to just, you know, they're wired a certain way where they want that success, especially if they've had it early in their career. And, you know, having that mentality of we should be better and we should be winning. Let's see how Drew Doughty and the Kings deal with that this year. Pretty special night here in Vancouver last night. Jeff, your thoughts on the ceremony and Bo Horvat getting the captaincy last night, that total experience last night.
I love the way it was done, Randy. Like, I really did. And I loved, what's not to like about the Sedins? I love the way that came together. I loved Henrik standing at center ice. Loved seeing Orlin Kurtenbach. You know, that's a personal one for me because growing up, my father would always tell me about, you know, the toughest guy he ever saw play, and that was Orlin Kurtenbach. My father passed last year. And every time I see Orlin Kurtenbach, I always think of my dad because how much he used to rave about Orlin Kurtenbach. So the first, of course, captain of the Vancouver Canucks, as you and your audience well know. But I thought everything was handled really well. I loved seeing Kirk McLean come out in his, you know, in his goalie gear.
Oh yeah.
You know, I love seeing Todd Bertuzzi coming out and looking leaned up and leaned out and looking fantastic. And you know, the puck drop was wonderful. Like everything about the presentation was first class. Sure, we can nitpick about, oh, Trevor Linden should have been there. Like, I get all that kind of stuff. But just from a pure presentation point of view, with Horvat taking off the jersey, the new one presented by Henrik, you know, for the failing hands, we pass the torch. I know it's a Habs reference, but still, I thought everything last night went off fantastic for the Vancouver Canucks, their fans, and certainly Bo Horvat.
We know that you've been very close to Junior for a long time, but the sentiment we keep getting is, you know, Bo's had that future captain label on him for a long time. Did you get that sense watching him in London?
Yep, 100%. And that was a team with, you know, a couple of larger-than-life personalities on it. I mean, that London team had, you know, players like Max Domi. That team had players like Chris Cherney. That team had players like Nikita Zadorov. That team had a 16-year-old Mitch Marner. Like, that was, we all know that the London Knights are usually the traveling all-star team. And, you know, that squad had some really good, bigger, larger-than-life junior personalities on it. And Bo Horvat was a very steadying and calm influence on that team. The Hunters loved Bo Horvat. And working with Brian Burke last night, I said, you know, that draft, you know, the Corey Schneider trade, Vancouver takes Bo Horvat with the pick they get for the goaltender. You know, that draft, what were your scouts saying about Horvat? And he said, one of the things that our crew kept coming back to was, you know, leadership qualities. You know, the knock was always the skating. He's gone out of his way to help correct that. But the one thing that you've always looked at Bo Horvat and said is, this guy is a leader. And I'll tell you what, if I can shoot a quick plug for our podcast here, a couple of weeks ago, we released the one with Bo Horvat on it. We sat down and Interviewed him for about 20 minutes, Elliot and I, in Chicago at the media festival, the car wash, as they call it. And hearing Bo Horvat describe the Sedins' last game in Vancouver, that last, you know, the dying moments of that game is quite spectacular. And just hearing him talk about his team, his experiences with the Sedins, the respect, cherishing the moment and all that, you know, you close your eyes and you listen to him talk and you say to yourself, this sounds like a captain that's talking to me. So this one was a no-brainer. And yeah, you're right, going all the way back to the London Knights of the OHL, this guy always sort of betrayed that down the road this guy was going to be a captain in the league.
Yeah, a pretty special night all around. You had the pass there with Erlen Kurtenbach and many of the names you mentioned there. You had Bo Horvat, the present, and also the future in terms of Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson. Let's focus on Hughes for a minute here. He's been playing a lot of minutes, which is for many quite surprising, just giving about 20 minutes, 22 minutes in certain cases. Yesterday he played a little bit less. Has that surprised you that Travis Green is saying, hey, we're going to give you the minutes if you deserve it?
And that's just it. And early in a season, what coaches, I mean, A, you're always trying to win a game, but two, coaches are trying to figure out what they have under the hood. Okay, what is making this engine go? What do we have here? So you put players in difficult positions. You put players in uncomfortable positions. You put players in positions that, if you're a casual fan, you say to yourself, well, what is the coach doing with this matchup? Or why does this coach have this defenseman on the ice in this situation? And you can tinker and test these things early in the season because the coach wants to know what he has. So I have zero problem with Travis Green feeding Quinn Hughes the minutes that he has. And, you know, outside of, you know, testing what he's like in all these different situations, he's just a flat-out good defenseman. Like, he is the new age, make space, instantly defense. Like, the one thing that I'm always amazed about when it comes to Quinn Hughes, and you go back to watching him play in the GTHL, is how quickly he can create his own ice with one pivot, one shoulder fake. Like, this kid is a master. You guys are right there and see it more than I do. He is a master at creating open ice around him, and that was one of the things, outside of a great shot that he has, one of the great things that we saw about Quinn Hughes last night. But yeah, no problem with him getting fed these minutes at all, because it looks like the kid can totally handle it, so why not?
It's crazy how much the game has changed, Jeff, right? Like last night, yeah. Wednesday night hockey is a perfect example. You know, we're watching Rasmus Dahlin, a teenage defenseman, take over the keys for the Buffalo Sabres, and now we're seeing it here in Vancouver with Quinn Hughes. Like, coaches see the way the game has evolved, and you know, they're handing over the keys, as I said, to these young defensemen, because that's what's going to have success in today's day and age.
You know what's interesting about that, Dan? And I've always made this point. If you take, okay, pick two hockey players, okay? Just put them in their street clothes or put them in suits so you don't know what position they play. One of them is 6'5", and the other is 5'10". Now, if you put them both against the wall, and it was 15 years ago, and guys, I said, tell me which one is the defenseman and which one is the goaltender, you would have said the 6'5" guy is the defenseman, the 5'10" guy is the goaltender. Here we are in 2019. That has completely flipped. Yeah. Now the 6'5" guy is your goalie and the 5'10" guy is your defenseman. That 6-foot barrier to entry for blue liners in the NHL is very, very much a thing of the past. And you look, I mean, each and every year these players are starting to get drafted, whether it's Quinn Hughes. That same draft, Chicago goes out and drafts. You mentioned London Knights. You know, Adam Boakfist, who played London Knights last season, like, and he's a smallish, highly skilled defenseman as well. And that is the trend. Like, you need mobile, puck-moving, quick-skating, sharp-edge defenseman right now, because that's the way the game is evolving, and you see it perhaps most profoundly on the blue line more so than anywhere else.
I got to say, I'm going to be watching a lot of Sabres games on Game Center Live and on Sportsnet this season, with the way that Dahlin and Eichel have been playing, especially last night against the Habs. What a game that was to tee up the Canucks matchup later in the evening. Sabres, they've looked real good. They got the high-octane offense. It's hard to really believe, because it's going to be a very tight race in the Eastern Conference, but what do you make of the Sabres so far this year?
still not there. I mean, still a lot of pieces away. I think it's a team that still, the way I've always described the Buffalo Sabres over the past couple of years is it's a team in reflection. Like, they still don't really know what they have. We're starting to get a real glimpse of how good Jack Eichel can be. We know that. We're starting, to your point, get a sense of how good Rasmus Dahlin can be. But, you know, this team still doesn't know how good Casey Mittelstadt can be. This team still doesn't know how good a player like Tage Thompson can be. I would still make the argument they still don't know how good a player like Victor Olofsson, who's had great success early. They still don't know how good this player can be. So until they get a little more sort of concrete about how everyone fits into this puzzle, it's still going to be a challenge for this team to qualify for the playoffs. But from an individual skill point of view, there's no denying there are a lot of elite-level players on this team already. And the two, obviously the ones you mentioned, 4 points last night for Jack Eichel. He may be, by the way, the most economical, powerful skater in the game right now. When you watch Eichel skate, there is not one wasted movement or one wasted motion, whether it's upper body or lower body. Everything is in perfect symmetry and harmony, and there is nothing, like, there's no wasted motion with his upper body when he's skating. Like, everything is powerful and it's really economical. And Rasmus Dahlin, I mean, we're starting to see just how good this guy can be. He can carry the puck, can make his own ice, can get a shot through. And the thing that I like about Rasmus Dahlin as well is he's not shy about stepping up on a neutral zone. This guy, you know, can bring just about every element of the blue line to every single game. So those are two of the elites. After that, there's a whole lot of question marks about the Buffalo Sabres.
Well, yeah, there's certain exciting things that are going on in Buffalo. Edmonton as well, they're 3-0 to start the season. But
yeah.
Another Western Conference team right now, there's not much excitement about. A lot of changes in San Jose this offseason. Is it time to worry based on the depth that they have there, or is it still too early in your opinion?
Playing Chicago tonight, they lose the Jeremy Colton squad, and oh boy, there's a whole lot of questions being asked. Like, look, there's a lot of big personalities in that room. You know, there's, of course, Joe Thornton, there's Erik Karlsson, there's Brent Burns, there's Evander Kane. As they're trying to transition this team at the same time to Logan Couture and Timo Meier and Tomas Hertl. And it's awkward right now. Like, it's a really tricky transition. And I don't think that people are understanding enough just how much of a loss it was with Joe Pavelski going to Dallas. Like, of all those players in San Jose's lost some, generally the rule of thumb is Doug Wilson, when he wants someone, he finds a way to get them to stay, and they do. Losing Joe Pavelski may be the biggest loss for any team right now to kick off the season, because the San Jose Sharks look at times directionless. I know the goaltending hasn't helped, and I get that. But the loss of Joe Pavelski, I think, is still stinging the San Jose Sharks early on this season. And another test to prove me wrong, I suppose, tonight against the Chicago Blackhawks.
Last one, Jeff. But, you know, I was just thinking about it because the Dodgers' disappointing loss last night. And, you know, like the team has just had so much success, but they can't win the big one. But they're, you know, they're a model franchise. And I liken it to the San Jose Sharks, who have missed the playoffs, what, twice since the turn of the century?
Yeah.
But, you know, how do you balance, you know, being there all the time, but also living with the disappointment of not getting the big one?
The interesting thing about the San Jose Sharks to me, as I just sort of winked at it a second ago, is the work that Doug Wilson does. Like, how many times, guys, has someone gone to San Jose and left? It doesn't happen very often if it's someone that Doug Wilson wants. And it's not as if, you know, this isn't a situation where it's like the Tampa Bay Lightning, where you can sell the no state tax and you put a lot of money in your jeans. San Jose is an expensive place to live. But guys get there and Doug Wilson sells them on it, and they've got a, you know, generally, you know, historically a really good culture in that room and around that organization. And when Doug Wilson wants someone to stay, they stay. And that to me has been the story of the San Jose Sharks the last however many years. When Doug Wilson wants you, he finds a way to keep you and make you stay. And listen, he gets, every now and then he gets a little bit of salary cap help. He got that this year. as they had to sign, you know, big ticket players like Timo Meier. All of a sudden, Kevin LeBanc comes in at essentially a rate that is not too far off from just accepting a qualifying offer. There's a belief that there's a contract waiting in Doug Wilson's drawer that he'll pull out come, you know, sometime in January or February. But Doug Wilson's done an amazing job of keeping a high-end team together and still turning it over with some young players, because when Joe Thornton's ready to disappear and Patrick Marleau's in for one more gasp here, Joe Pavelski's already left, when it is really time to turn it over, this is a team that's well-insulated and has some players to step in to some key spots.
Hockey Central's Jeff Merrick and the 31 Thoughts podcast with Merrick and Elliot Friedman. I think the new episode just dropping with Nicholas Lidstrom.
It's true. One of, if not the greatest defensemen of all time. And one of the rarest things ever occurs in this interview with Nick Lidstrom, Dan. You know what that is?
What's that?
He laughs.
Okay, we know when that well ever, here in Vancouver with the Swedish connections.
Yeah. When have you ever seen Nick or heard Nicholas Lidstrom laugh? Well, in this interview, you'll actually hear Nicholas. I mean, there's some wonderful, you know, great stories about playing in the NHL and you know playing with Beast early on, etc. But for me, the big takeaway is, wow, Nicholas Lidstrom, you know, the perfect human being, actually laughs in an interview. So if for no other reason, check out the piece just to hear Lidstrom laugh.
It's going to be great. Thanks, Jeff.
Awesome. Brandeep, Dan, thanks so much.
Sportsnet 650.